let us be officially open this meeting. We will be having a briefing from ESCOM and on the annual report and financial statement for 2018-2019 financial year. Welcome members of the committee, honorable members. Welcome ESCOM, acting group CEO, and the delegation. We welcome everybody, including the members of the public who are here in media. Without wasting time, let's quickly get the apologies. Secretary?
Okay, Chair, the apology I've received is from Ms. Marconi. She's still not feeling well.
Okay. No other apologies. Maybe other members will be joining us. Welcome the department acting DG. I'm sorry for getting you. I'm taking you as part of the family of the steering committee. Yeah. Mr. I think you're ready to kick the ball. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman, and the honorable members. Good morning. I have with me my colleagues Khalid and Martin from the Khalid is the CFO in ESCOM. Martin is in Khalid's team. Chair, these results that we're presenting, they are for the period that has ended on the 30th of March 2019. Just to contextualize, it is the process, it's the timing by when we had to come here that would have just had an impact on that. So to the extent, because these are results that have been audited, these are results that have been publicly published now. So, honorable members, to know that it could well be old news, as it were. So I just wanted to set that context. So even in dealing with, we have had various other engagements with various structures of parliament on whether it's on SCOA or on appropriation as to what then. And as we are aware that the Minister of Finance towards the end of the of this month will release the MCPPS, which deals specifically on some of the financial debt side of ESCOM, and the President will be releasing his the ESCOM paper about the future. So if we could just get that understanding through you, Chair, that later they are, a lot is already happening, a lot is being said, and some of it we would be not in a position to talk too much about without undermining the protocols of the other competent leadership to deal with them. So these are results that remain very disappointing. As manifested by the declining financial, operational, and our environmental performance. There is encouraging progress to instill governance and root out financial mismanagement and malfeasance and maladministration. On the operational side, we have implemented our Generation 9 point recovery program, which has started to see some positive results in plant performance through the winter period. We are pleased to say, thankfully, we have not had to load shed since the 24th of March 2019. The government financial support arrests our short-term liquidity concerns and release the financial pressure. As I indicated, these are issues that will be covered in more detail as they are part of the work in progress that the Minister of Finance and National Treasury are working on. Our turnaround strategy to stabilize, to separate and grow the company for financial and operational sustainability remains urgent. Those elements of the strategy that we can implement, we continue to. But at the end, it is very critical to create a country energy plan as the next few years pose tougher challenges for Eskom and the energy industry in an ever-changing landscape. This period, we have had net loss after tax of 21 billion, which was 10 times the loss we had reported the previous year. We lost about 2.3 billion the previous year. We now reporting a 21 billion loss for the period ended March 31. We have had up until March 30 days of rotational load shedding. We have had industrial action that has impacted on operations and finance. Our energy availability factor has been at 70% and to the later 60s. That has necessitated for us to spend more on our diesel-generated power. We spent about 6.5 billion to minimize the magnitude of load shedding in the period. It is in the same period that we had some challenges on our coal. Our municipal area debt rose to 20 billion. The environmental performance, owing to the age of our power station and the quality of the coal that we've been using, has continued to further deteriorate. The leadership stability, as at this time, we were, as at the 31st of March, we were starting to believe we have found stability at Eskom, having now appointed the chief operating officer, and the chief financial officer had just been appointed in a permanent position at the time. Just some few headlines on our plant availability. The graph on the left really shows how our plant availability over the period between 2014 and 2019 has performed. The emphasis more is on the blue, bars, where our generation has declined from the highs of 78 to 70, and we've also seen less than 70. Our coal plant had declined even further than our overall generation, and our energy utilization factor has continued to stabilize, increasing to 91, but it has stayed in the 90 level. This our plant on the other side has grown, has aged, with attendant challenges of reliability. The average plant life of average life of a plant at Eskom is about 37 years. Our transmission and distribution networks do show stable performance, but they are the areas that continue to be exposed to either illegal connection on the distribution side that leads to overloaded transformers and substations that then explode. On the other side, we have seen vandalism where people physically with angle grinders go and cut a whole transmission pylon using the steel members for a variety of reasons, including selling that into the scrap metal industry. We have installed 540 megavolt transformer capacity, We have had 379 kilometers of transmission lines commissioned. Our stock coal started to improve by the time we had reported our year end. On the environmental and safety side, there we have seen increasing decline and deterioration. Our water consumption has been on the increase, and our particulate emission standards have been deteriorating. We have connected just under 192,000 new houses in 2019, compared to 215,000 houses for the previous year. Our lost time due to injury has worsened, moving from a rate of 0.24 in 2018 to 0.31. Regrettably, we have had three fatalities during this period, the same number of fatalities we had last year, and these are our own employees. But members, to note that we also have a lot of contractors that are operating on our site. There we had said the 11 fatalities. Our broad-based PE attributable spend is at 85 billion. We spend with black-owned suppliers another 52 billion. Racial, gender, and disability equity has improved, albeit small. We've had 933,000 beneficiaries through our corporate social investments, driven by and large on the work that we do in the foundation and in the educational space. So, Chair, if I could pass on to the CFO to take us through the financial performance.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. If we move on to the financial performance, I'll explain the detail on the income statement and the cash flows. I think just on the overview, the point to highlight there is the audit opinion for March 2019. Firstly, around our going concern status, that it reflected material uncertainty, and effectively, with the support that we received from government, we were able to then justify the basis of signing off the financials as a going concern. But it is an area that has been highlighted, similarly like the previous financial year. Honourable Chair and members, I think the other important item from an opinion perspective is around our procurement processes. Around the PFMA compliance requirements. That modified opinion has continued into this last financial year. However, we do see that the trend is going in the correct direction. It does take time to fix and resolve, and I'll highlight in the next slide, Chairperson, around the reportable, the irregular expenditures, and fruitless and wasteful. I think the first point to just highlight there is that the waterfall chart, what it's doing, it's reflecting what the opening balance of irregular expenditures were at the beginning of this financial year in April 2018 of 21 billion rand. And then as we continue to clean up around our procurement processes, we have then recognized an additional 3.4 billion of irregular expenditures that's related to prior years that we've now recognized in the financials. And once a transaction and contract is identified as irregular, it may have a number of years to still spend against. And as we spend during the financial year, that amount is then also disclosed as part of the irregular expenditure, which is reflected in the 1.7 billion of contracts that have been identified as irregular and are continuing per the contractual agreement. Chairperson, I think to highlight that as new transactions during the last financial year, we've recognized 1.5 billion of new irregular expenditure. I think that must be taken in context of the amount of new contracts that were signed in the FY 2019, which totaled around 61 billion. So I think that's the point to highlight that we believe as Eskom we are putting in the necessary controls to rectify this situation. And then what was condoned, 1.1 billion, and then what was recovered, the 900 million being effectively the recovery and payment from McKinsey during the last financial year. That then left us with a total closing balance of 25.7 billion rand, and it just splits in the bottom between the amount of transactions and of the 1.5 billion that is new and where it was comprised and constituted from. So I think to highlight here that we believe we are on the right track and we just continue with that discipline in resolving our procurement processes. If we, Honourable Chair, we move on to the income statement, one will see that on a revenue side, it remained relatively flat, a growth of 3 billion from 177 billion. That being attributable firstly to the tariff that was received in FY19, but reduced by the lower sales volumes, which I will touch on in a future slide. I think the importance here is that our earnings before interest, tax and depreciation, Chairperson and members, you will see that reflects a drop from 45 billion to 31 billion rand, and that mainly being attributable to the growth in primary energy costs of 14 billion rand from the previous year's 85 billion to 99 billion, and we will go into detail on primary energy. And then employee benefits grew year on year by 4 billion rand, where our other operating expenses remain flat at 18 billion. Once you go below the line, that's a function of what is happening in terms of the assets that are being commissioned, and you will see that the depreciation and amortization grew by 7 billion year on year, percentage-wise being 29%. It also includes accelerated depreciation put through in the last financial year for Komati Power Station. And then, Chairperson, our net finance costs had a net growth of 5 billion year-on-year. One, as our debt increased, and number two, as more units get commissioned from Madupi and Kusile, we no longer capitalize that interest, we then expense it to the income statement. With our assessed loss, then you get the income tax benefit of 8 billion to then, as our chairperson has said, the growth in our loss year on year from 2 billion to 21 billion. If we now move on to the revenue side, just to highlight there, Chairperson, I think firstly if we look at the bottom table, you will see on the sales side that on the domestic sales it dropped by 1 terawatt from 197 to 196 terawatts, and on the international sales cross-border it dropped by 3 terawatts. The main reason for the drop in cross-border sales has been the regional countries, now that they've come out of the drought in the last year, being able to self-generate for themselves, therefore requiring less dependence on South Africa to support that supply. I think, Chairperson, the other point to highlight is on the top where we talk about the revenue, that drop of 3 billion, you will see that the accounting treatment under IFRS adjustment grew from 3 billion to 7 billion rand, which is effectively relates to, for accounting purposes now, Eskom can only recognize its doubtful debt once payments are made and the cash is received. And this is linked to the growth in our REA debts in Soweto Municipal and some other REA debts. As that increases, we then adjust from the revenue a bigger adjustment shown in that 7 billion rand. I think that's important to highlight. If I now move on to explaining maybe the big contributing factor to the drop in and the growth in losses and the drop in EBITDA, it's the growth in primary energy. And Chairperson, this is a function of firstly the increase in coal costs being linked to, we were in a situation where we required to procure coal that was available on a short-term basis, which did come at a much higher rand per ton because we had low stock levels across our fleet, and we also needed to improve the stockpiles to ensure that Eskom has the ability to then generate power to meet the demand. So those urgent purchases of some 42 contracts have resulted in an increase on the coal side of a total of 5 billion rand year on year. And then you also see during FY 2019, in an attempt to minimize the impact of interruptions, Eskom, as our chairperson has said, we have to utilize both Eskom's open cycle gas turbines as well as the IPP gas turbines much harder than the previous financial years. We've also seen that as more renewables are connected to the grid, they generate more electricity, and then we have to then make sure that those costs are then passed on to them and then the growth in renewables. So in total, that basically gives you the 17% increase in primary energy from 85 billion to 99 billion rand from 2018 to 2019. Mm-hmm. If we move on now to our debt situation, where as at March, our total debt comprised 441 billion rand, reflected in debt securities and borrowing, that grew from 389 billion year on year. Chairperson, you will see that it basically we will have to fund our operations through a combination of firstly the reduction in liquid assets from 24 to 12 billion, and then the growth in borrowings to ensure that we can continue with our operational requirements, as well as making sure that we continue with our capital needs, both in terms of generation, transmission, and distribution. If we now move on to, I think, the critical part of where Eskom finds itself, it's really about the cash from operations. It's not sufficient to service our debt requirements. You will see that firstly, your net cash from operating activities has dropped from 38 billion share to 33 billion year on year, but your debt service requirements has increased from 44 billion to 69 billion rand, and that debt servicing includes both interest as well as capital repayments of the debt. That then leaves us with a shortfall before we even invest in our capital requirements of 36 billion. We did drop our capital requirements significantly between 2018 from 55 billion to 36 billion. However, and then we had to finance the 72 billion with 58 billion from financing activities, And as I said, the remainder was then funded in our drop in cash and cash equivalents in terms of liquid assets. Just to highlight to the committee chairperson, the bottom graphic is just demonstrating that going forward with 440 billion of debt, there's significant debt service requirements that will occur over the medium term. Although we've reduced our capital spend from a traditional 50 billion to 55 billion per annum, that is the pressure that, as the chairman has said, that is being addressed to the other committees of Parliament to highlight that. And in terms of what does this mean on the next slide of the cash from operations and the financial performance, one would then expect that all your key financial ratios has deteriorated year on year, with your EBITDA margin dropping from 26% to 18%, and more importantly that your debt service cover ratio ideally should be one where it can meet interest and capital. It's effectively half of that, which means the other half is funded through the support that is required from government. And then culminating in your gearing ratio increasing from 72% to 76%. The graph on the right-hand side reflects the drop in profitability as well as earnings before interest and tax, and then that's reflected in the ratios and cash from operating figure on the bottom side of the slide. Honorable Chairperson, if we just highlight our capital expenditure and the trend in that, as we are nearing the conclusion of Madupi and Kusile, we see then the trend in our capital expenditure decreasing, as I highlighted, from previously around 56 billion, 52 billion, to now in the last financial year, 34 billion rand, of which a portion was spent on your existing infrastructure as well as the new assets infrastructure that is required. To highlight to the committee that the electrification, which is funded by the Department of Energy of 2.8 billion, is a separate funding mechanism. And just to disclose how much we spent in 2018 and 2019, Chairperson, on Madupi and Kusile in particular over those last 2 years. If we move on to the item I highlighted around the rear debts, in particular your municipality Soweto, it also includes some large power users and international rear debts, but the trend is concerning, whereas at March 2019 we ended up at close to 20 billion rand, an increase of 6.3 billion for the year, averaging about 500 million per month. And then we see that the payment levels for Soweto sit at 12.5%, and the overall current payment levels for municipalities is 81%. Chairperson, I think it's important to also say that on our other customer base, there's 2.5 billion of arrear debt and 800 million linked to international customers. This is an important item to address through the process going forward to contribute to Eskom's liquidity and financial sustainability. Just from a funding perspective, in 2019, we raised 63 billion rand. We are planning for this financial year that we're in to raise 46 billion rand. At the beginning of the financial year, we've already had committed facilities of around 27 billion rand, being about 58% thereof. just to highlight that a large portion of our debt is also guaranteed to government, of which of the 350 billion as at March 2019, we've already utilized 279 billion of that and have committed a further 52 billion with 19 billion remaining. Our bottom graph just reflects when those respective loans will mature in terms of where guarantees were utilized. Chairperson, if I move on to the next slide, Eskom has reviewed the last two decisions of the regulator in terms of the 2015, 16 and 17 RCA determinations, as well as the 5.3% decision for 2019. We are currently awaiting a court date when this matter will sit and be heard. In terms of the MY34 decision, Honourable Chairperson, 9.4% for 2020. It also allowed for the phasing in of the recovery of the previous RCAs of 8 billion per annum, which culminated in terms of the average price for this financial year being 13.87%. Chairperson, it's our understanding that the way the regulator had treated the support announced by the Minister of Finance in February, where that 23 billion was then deducted from Eskom's allowed revenue in MYPD4. We are awaiting the detailed reasons for decisions by the regulator, which should be published soon. We have also, as part of the process, on an annual basis, reconciled our performance to the previous decision. And in terms of the methodology, we make a RCA application for 2019, which was around 27 billion. Chair, just to highlight that at the results, we just gave an indication of the budget for 2020, basically just highlighting that we were expecting a similar bottom line loss, with the EBITDA improved marginally by from 31 to 34 billion, but with your depreciation increasing, etc., more plant commission plus finance costs, it left us with a net loss. We are focusing on making sure that we can reduce that loss, but processes that are implemented will take time to reap the maturity of benefits. As part of this, Chair, we have challenged the business to extract savings over the next 5 years. At the end of 2023, our cost base, we would like that to be reduced by 33 billion. And over these 5 years, it will add up to a cash benefit of 77 billion rand to Eskom's cash flow. The bottom is just highlighting that even in this financial year, your debt service commitments of 84 billion compared to your cash from operations, and the big difference between the EBITDA number of 34 and the 25 in the graphic is linked to working capital, mainly attributable to us restoring our cold stock days across our fleet, which doesn't affect the income statement but has a cash flow impact. You will see, in that cash flow graph, we have the initial support by government announced in February of 23, plus the additional appropriation of 26, which left a cash movement shortfall of 5 billion, which Eskom is addressing. Chair, I think just to highlight in the next slide, we need the price of electricity to be able to recover prudent and efficient costs, and the graphic below just reflects that Eskom has a cost of capital of about 10%, and if we are not allowed to recover that cost of capital, we will always see then the pressure build up on the balance sheet and the debt going forward. And the dotted line at the bottom is just reflecting the actual returns that were generated by Eskom since 2014 to 2019, hovering around between 1% and 0% return on assets, where we believe it should be sitting more between the 7% and 8% return on assets from a regulatory perspective and a sustainability perspective. If we just move on, Honorable Chairperson, the last, this graphic just reflects one. Statista did analysis and benchmarking of the electricity price in South Africa. And just to highlight the difference between Eskom and South Africa, Eskom is obviously our selling price, and South Africa is representative of the entire sector, including the municipalities. That's the slight difference. The point to highlight here is that we're still on the lower end of the graph in terms of prices, and on the left-hand side, just some indication of where the price of electricity was indicated by some various institutions like BUSA, EIUG, between 108 and 118 cents per kilowatt, and even in the previous IRP, they reflected a electricity selling price line of 116 cents, where we currently sitting at around 90 cents per kilowatt for March 2019. Chair, if I just look to now sum up, in terms of turnaround plan for Eskom, as the Chair has highlighted, this has been dealt with through other processes. All we are highlighting is the debt is important. Eskom needs to deal with its own cost base. As I mentioned, the 77 billion rand to reduce the base by 33 billion. And at the end of the day, to be sustainable, you need the price to recover its operating cost and to service the debt, service cover commitments. So in conclusion, Chair, I think, yes, on an operational perspective, we do see some positive changes, but the financials are a reflection of how the operations are performing. And the more we can get generation and the energy availability up, it means less dependence on the expensive supply options, and more importantly, to give confidence to the economy that Eskom can then meet the supply that's required, as highlighted by my chairperson. So, still a challenge. We're confident we can address it. I thank you.
So, Chairman, that's it.
Thank you. Thank you, CFO, and the acting group CEO. Okay, Honorable Mare, you will be the first one. Yeah, I can.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are in the month of October, and within the next month, if I just think of the matriculants that will write the exam, if I was in accountancy as I've done, on a higher grade level, and they would have given me this balance sheet, I would have answered, close the doors, because this business is bankrupt. If the state doesn't support as a shareholder, that's the fact if you look at the balance sheet. In the beginning of this year at the SONA, the president announced that Eskom should be unbundling. So my first question would be then, how far are we with this process, and is it going ahead in which form? And what will be the cost implications with this whole process? Because anything you change and unbundle and divert, there's a cost implication of magnitude. And would that impact then further on the cash flow of Eskom as such? The next point is, if we look at the big loss that's been made in billions, and we equal that to the municipal debt that is outstanding, it could have equaled out to a zero balance if everything of the municipality was paid immediately. Now, the work established a ministerial committee to address this issue about municipal debt, but it doesn't seem that this committee is successful, because otherwise there shouldn't be an increase in the municipal debt as it seems is going forward. Then I want to ask a question, because I did make a visit at some stage to Kusile and Medupi. What was now at this point the final cost separately for the two power stations as originally being stipulated when it was started up to now, the difference? But it will be interesting. And what we learn out of this whole issue of escalating the cost for Eskom and building two huge, it's actually huge stroke large plant generations like that, because we have to learn something along the way what happened by actually going ahead by building two of these, and because the capital outlay is of enormous proportions. And with the green energy coming forward and being a big factor in the life of all South Africans, and we all actually looking into more green generating of green energy, how would that impact now in the long run of going forward for the next 5 year term on the income of Eskom as such? My last question was, on your one slide from the municipal and the weighted debt increase that was heading there, you stipulate that your current payment level of 81% is by municipalities, but then you put in brackets there, excluding metros. Where do we stand? Because the metros is a fundamental, to put it, third sphere of government that actually is a major user of electricity generated by Eskom versus the rural areas. Where do we stand with the metros as far as the current debt payment is concerned? And I've seen the application that was put forward to NERSA, and to the end of the day, on the next slide, the Eskom revenue process, you've also stipulated, and that's correct, that decision was taken of a 9.41% average increase implemented together with the 8 billion RCI recovery. So it resulted in a 13.87 average increase. But as you know, this won't, at the end of the day, generate enough cash flow for Eskom. And as you also know, what was the application you've made percentage-wise? But 13.8% as such on the average consumer of there, while the economy is already in, like, it is like stag inflation that we actually experience, that this 13.87% is already putting most the average consumers back as far as their cash flow is concerned, living day to day in South Africa. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Madam. Honourable Mkhwanazi.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Chairperson, firstly, I think we need to welcome the report as the Chairperson of Eskom put it clearly that is a report as for the 31st of March, and we must appreciate that a lot has happened in between that and now. Chairperson, if you may allow me to get some short clarity and answers. On slide 4, you said the total, you have increased in the total spend on diesel generated power and the condensate power vis-a-vis then the NERSA can allow that. Were there any reason, and what is your plan going forward to decrease the? Secondly, Chair, I just want to make a follow up on the issue of the joint ministerial task team. Is there any processes or progress there? And if we may say today we can settle the municipal debt and the Soweto debt can be settled, how far can that put or assist Eskom as of now? Thirdly, Chair, on the issue of I think it's implied seven on your social economic performance as stable, because I think so we must not lose sight. I don't want to lose focus on why state-owned companies or state-owned entities or on the sales on the economic growth focus program. If you can, regarding that, those program like your spend with the black-owned suppliers, the racial gender and disability equal equity on your beneficiaries through your CSI program. I don't know whether it's... Yeah, I'm saying step off. Oh, yeah. thank you. It's better now. Regarding that, the promotion and the support for too small and medium enterprise, do you as the company be able to say you've made an impact there? And what is your impact analysis on Lokunjen on that program? I think my fourth question, Chair, is in flight. I can't see the pages. The pages are numbering. Okay. 15. On your decrease and increase and the shortfall, can you further clarify, and what is your plan going forward to decrease the local vendor shortfall, and the expected ratio on your slide 16, what is the expected ratio going forward? Yesterday, Chair, we did get a report on the audit outcomes, and yeah, it is disappointing as the chair of the entity has said. But there was a report on the irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. Is there any investigation? Because my understanding is, if you get a wasteful expenditure, there must be an investigation to that. Is there any investigation on that wasteful expenditure? And on pricing contracts, that was on place, and what is the outcome of that process? And there was a negotiation process that was entered to. And what is the result of that? And has Eskom, out of that investigation, if there's any, have you succeeded in terminating some of the contracts that were affecting that? For now, Chair, let me stop there with the hope that I will be given an opportunity to make a follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kwanasmi. Honorable Shavala.
Right. Thank you, Shepherdson. Let me just immediately speak on the issue of the unbundling. Obviously, we want to know what is the progress of the unbundling. But I'm more interested on the cost implication. If you can highlight and give us the picture. And I like the question Honorable Mukwanazi asked that says, what if we get ESCOM and we kind of cost structure perhaps our debt that we have, or not only a debt, but the debt that is owed that we are not able to collect from all everybody else that owes us? What if we get that right? What are we sitting with? I just want to find out from the CFO, have you ever did your books and sat down and said, if ESCOM were to be run efficiently and were to collect its money, what percentage can it really contribute to a South African economy? I think for me that's very important, because this is the biggest economic factor that really can assist us with the fiscal cliff that we're facing as a country. So it's not a brainer that all of us need ESCOM and need ESCOM to run efficiently and with leadership and governance and all sorts of things that we need. What strategies has ESCOM put in place to deal with the issue of environmental failure to meet environmental targets? We've seen that the targets it didn't meet, and something that at a particular point you don't have control of. But is there anything that you've done? There's a call that has been made by the Minister of Energy. You saw it, I'm sure it's all over the news, the issue of increasing investment in the renewable energy sector. How are they going to be integrated in ESCOM capital investment program? If you can just answer me on that one. On your, what is this book, integrated report, the one set 31st of March, unfortunately I don't think that you have, it's page 38. It speaks about the contract that you are tied under. It says that there's a development board for the future of economies, the electricity supply industry and consumers worldwide. However, ESCOM is tied into 20-year contracts under earlier bid windows. This is where it speaks about your bid windows and how much. So it says 20 years. So I just want to find out, what are the remaining years? Because this was pretty much that you remaining with, as well as we understand where you headed. Electrification of houses. You mentioned, Chair, that you just electrified last year, this year, opposed to last year, electrified. I think the number was higher that you mentioned. Who are you electrifying that is owing you? It's a blunt question. And I want to find out, if we electrify, are we in a relationship with Department of Housing? And if that housing that we're doing it for, are they not owing us? And if we're doing for municipality, which municipality are we electrifying for? Because we understand housing built is a program that continues, and of course people must get electrification. But who are we electrifying for that is going to pay us? Or is it just from ESCOM to a customer relation? But if it has to do with people that owes us, I want to find out at what legislation you are agreeing on continuing giving service, knowing that the people are owing you. The Soweto issue, in your report, is the biggest issue. And we keep on, you know, mentioning and talking about Soweto, to say you owe a big chunk. Look, President has made a call to say people must pay for services that they are using. No brainer. The reality of the situation, you go to Soweto issue, is that we have issues of people who are unemployed, indigenous families. We can mention all sorts of social ills that we have. And these are communities, these are townships where you have that. Now, where in the case where the municipality is not assisting with its own residents, what is ESCOM doing insofar as being in a position to have stakeholder engagement with those communities. We understand that there's been some type of trying to get, you know, residents to pay. To a point where there's been endless marches. Almost every day you wake up, there's a march. People are not receiving electricity. Soweto residents over 2 months, I can tell you, communities in Soweto, Tragi, Muletani, they've not been electrified. Some way sector boxes that are not being fixed, and we understand there's criminal elements that come in and criminal justice system have come in to assist yourself. So it's holistic. We understand, we are with you. But we want to have a situation where you are able to come closer to those communities and be able to have some intense stakeholder relations. I mean, if a resident of Soweto in one household, they've got backyard dwellers and those people don't pay electricity, they themselves in that house don't pay, it puts pressure on the grid, we understand that. But we're saying, can we have some sort of engagement where Soweto residents are made to have a better relationship with the electricity itself. Case in point was Western Cape. There was an issue of water. Till today, there's still water restrictions that have been put, and the community had a different relationship with water. People went out, bought water, understood that you need to fill up, understood you cannot brush, certain, so forth and so on. For me, it's an issue of attitude, mentality, but we have to take our communities with us to have a better relationship with water, rather than to say, if you don't pay, we're cutting. For me, I feel that there should be that type of an effort. Chair, the just transition. I don't know how you're going to do that one, and I'm sure it affects your, the workers. If you can share with us the just transition implementation, what type of impact would it have? But have you had more your stakeholders engagement in that? Because we like to think perhaps in, it would be one of the factors that we need to consider, but the proper arrangements for that, I think that's more important. The last point, ESCOM sector 2.0 states governance and leadership being problematic. Governance and ethics, legal contraventions, it's still in the red when it comes to yourself. So now, matter of public importance that is vital is that the merger between the two Eskom biggest coal suppliers, the Australian Mining House, the two of South African Energy Coal, SAEC, and Territory Resources. Now, there are risks involved in this. Has not only raised questions about competitive procurement, but could also pose risks for Eskom in South Africa. So if you can share with us if you have looked into that and those risks and how we're going to mitigate it. Because what we need stability. Our community, business community, needs to understand that we have confidence and we can still do this one. At this point, we are happy with the appointments that have been done in so far as governance is concerned. The restructuring officer, do you have an idea when will it be appointed as the chief assist ESCOM as well? So we would want to find out. But other than that, for myself, as my closing, so I don't want to come back as a follow-up to any responses. I want to say that to the board and to the ESCOM, as this committee, we are really interested in trying to assist ESCOM to really do its job, but do its job efficiently, effectively, without any interference, but also with governance and leadership at the helm of ESCOM. We're really, really interested to assist and understand it, but we need you to bridge the gap between yourself and your service, and the people that you're giving service to. I thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation from ESCOM. In your presentation, Chair, you mentioned that there is a challenge of the deaf. They're stealing the cable. What is the plan to stop all to take the cable? And another question is, what is the analysis has been done to understand that what affects non-paying municipalities? And the third one, what is your strategies that can put place offset that electricity for poor, for poor, because we are not the same. The others that are living with the grants, and others that are working. So what is the plan that you set up there? Thank you, Chen.
Honorable Kumede.
Yes, Chen. So you need to the chair, as well as the finance person, has highlighted quite a number of positives, as well as perhaps hopes that are on perhaps that are online. I just want to find out what has been perhaps your lesson in terms of the net loss of 21 billion. What did you learn of that kind of a situation? How could you curb and begin to control the situation that we don't really in the future fall into a similar pitfall? As much as this question has been asked, but I was interested to know, other than Soweto municipality, how many more those municipalities that are owing, I nearly said us, but owing ESCOM, that in fact have not paid their dues. The difficulty in this situation is municipalities don't pay direct to ESCOM. Perhaps they pay back to the municipality. Have you ever perhaps considered a situation where communities pay direct to ESCOM? Or perhaps that may pose a bigger challenge in terms of administration, where you have to increase the numbers of people then who will begin to monitor all this. What is the... I've heard that in the few days ago, that ESCOM has sort of been considering, if not contemplating, of taking some of this to court. What would you think could be the benefit out of that process? But I want to say as well that the matter, I think I wish to concur with some of the previous speakers. This matter may be much more political. It may need the engagement of two levels of government. That is three levels, national, provincial, as well as local. It's not a war that ESCOM can fight it all by itself. It needs a kind of a joint venture for all of us to make sure that this war is in fact won. The other question is, what's your view? Because in many instances we take these things light, but they impact on some of the losses that at the end ESCOM does incur. The ever-increasing of informal settlements, as well as the non-payments by the communities. I think there is another view that the Honorable Shabalala has suggested, but it would be good as well that we any view as well from your side, that how do you see that? Do you see it as an insignificant thing, or you see it as something that has to be controlled? What's your take on the, because electricity has become too expensive, I think that one as well is covered, that it has become too expensive for the general members of the community. and we know especially the situation outside, as well as some of the things that have been mentioned in terms of social ills, and people are not paying and many of them are unemployed. Is it something that is expected that people will not pay? What's your take on that one? Well, I've asked this one, that do you really ever consider that communities pay direct to you or ESCOM? As much as I know it may be a very gigantic kind of a task that we may be involved in, but at least it needs a view that we need to do it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Okay. Honorable Shabalala, you wanted to add something?
Yes, thank you so much, Chair, for your indulgence. The matter on the vetting, can we get an update if all your board members have been vetted and your senior management lifestyle audits have been conducted? Issues of voluntary disclosure, have they been done? Obviously, you would understand why would we ask this question, for purposes of minimizing the risk of ESCOM employees doing business with the state. We've seen the state of capture. We don't want to see ourselves in the state again. So we want to find out, insofar as yourselves, at this point of leadership, have you really paid attention to this issue? The court judgment, the Newcastle court ruling, I'm really interested in that one, Chair. We saw it. We went to court. It's not done. The judgment says keep the light on, and the case will still be looked at again in December. So in talking about 2 months or 30 days, what is to be done? For me, it's not about Chairperson going to court, because we could hear the contradiction between the municipality saying that we ask ESCOM to do the same thing. Let's meet each other halfway, let's make work out an entertainment plan. But ESCOM did not want to listen. We went and litigated, then we lose money, we go to the courts. It goes back to the stakeholder issue that I'm speaking about that feels very critical for you. But my point on that issue, I'm more interested on how the law can assist ESCOM in collection, not the law as enforcing people to really pay, or whether you keep the lights on and off. You can keep lights on and off. The reality is that they owe you. Are you going to get the money? Have we looked into that, if you do have your legislative arm in your own board sector, that's looked at possibilities of really checking how the law can assist us in making sure that we really get the money that we're owed to. Yeah, no, let me leave it there. But just to say, Chair, as the ruling party, we're very clear. We don't want privatization of ESCOM, and we're not even going to support that. Mm. But the issue will be, what is it that we can do without? Has ESCOM looked into that? Issues of core and non-core, what can be done in the main to assist ESCOM to get out of trouble that we're in? But privatization is something that we will not be agreeing to. Thanks.
Thank you, honorable members. Babu Mabuza, Nebanda, before I give you to respond, I do want to appreciate the improvement which we have witnessed as a committee members and the progress thereof. But of course, we also appreciate where you come from. We are a very responsible collective here, despite having coming from different perspectives. But we understand the situation which put us where we are today, as Honorable Shabalala has alluded to. But the real of the situation is that the entity is still faced with liquidity problems. And also
we still see irregular expenditure. Of course, it decreased, but it's still huge as far as we are concerned. Therefore, we would like, when you come next financial year, to give us a totally different picture, some kind of a born-again child. Because this situation cannot be allowed to continue. It's in fact having implications on you. People are not looking at people behind you or people before you. You adopted it. Therefore, it's going to be written at some point into your faces. That's why, while we appreciate the progress, but we must see a total different kind of a situation when we meet in the next financial year. Because you also, in your presentation, in fact, on the there is a problem of reputational damage that impact in terms of the investors not willing to continuously losing appetite to finance the entity. And including people who are shouting at the state also on the bailout that it's enough, all that impact on you. Therefore, the sooner we sort of cleaning this damage, the better. Of course, on this one of the unbundling, which you are all looking at it, would like to see a situation where it doesn't impact on jobs. Currently, we are sitting at a very, very unprecedented level of unemployment, and it's hitting the poor more than any other group in society. Therefore, to us, while we would like this process to be executed, but it must be an inclusive kind of, we must not also ask the committee hear most of the developments on television. We would like to be put into confidence so that we can also, we are also responsible, we are a political leadership of this country. We would like also to be continuously involved and be listened to some of the concerns that we'll be having in the process, especially if our poor communities are affected. The other issue is that I don't think that the ESCOM is playing an activist kind of a role in dealing with the issues that the Honorable Shabalala raised, criminal kind of activities. You know, there are communities that I know, they are just established and they use electricity with no ESCOM connections there. They can steal electricity from a pole, from a traffic, from a robot, from a traffic robot kind of a pole, and they spend more years. I know it here at home, you know, where you find this area depends on those robots. To get electricity, the whole robot is supplying a lot of communities, and the ESCOM people are living not far from this community. They see these kind of activities. It is not about switching off that robot as such, because it will be causing another crisis on the other side. But it means that they have to address, they have to do their work, engage the community, and also supply electricity to that particular community if there is any other problem, perhaps. Because those things happen when a community occupies a land that is a private land where municipalities are reluctant to provide services. Therefore, still, ESCOM cannot be neutral and stay away from that. It either put pressure on that municipality or put pressure on the government to resolve that particular matter. so that there could be an official kind of accessing electricity by that particular community rather than stealing it. Therefore, I think still we need an ESCOM that is active in our communities, because electricity is such a very important, it's like a basic need, you know. Therefore, people have to be very active in dealing with that. For example, including, if I can raise another matter related to that, the issues of municipalities. Most of these municipalities, especially in rural areas, more than 80% of the community service is indigent community, and we have indigent policy in this country, you know. Therefore, when you demand in that particular municipality to help you, I mean to pay, I'm not sure how do you reconcile that. I think I would like that clarity. How do you reconcile a situation for a municipality in Tsolo, for example, or somewhere in a deep rural community in Limpopo? How do you reconcile the fact that the majority of that particular community is an indigent community? You've got a lot of unemployed, you've got a lot of disabled, you've got children-headed kind of families, and you've got all those serious problems. And then that municipality is owing, we're told it's owing close to a billion to ESCOM. How do you reconcile all those kind of issues? And my last point, in the AG report, there was $507 million in fraudulent expenditure, which was due to failure on the part of ESCOM to conclude transport contract to collect coal. I'm not sure whether the person responsible for that has been identified, and what are you doing to take that particular individual into task, and what action has been taken? Why has ESCOM not engaged with the coal supplier in the first place to minimize that loss? Can you, in your response, also take that into consideration? Thank you.
Chairman, thank you very much. We'll try and share these answers. Some I had written, and if I have missed something between Caleb and Martin, we'll do our Tom and Jerry song here. But maybe an important overrider is, as we indicated earlier, that these results, in their nature, they so historic. We are now currently working on auditing the interim results. So the 6 months from March to end of September, that's where, so not long, we should be doing that. But also there's been a lot that has been said and being done about ESCOM. So one would have to try, in answering the questions, Chair, with your indulgence, just I need to observe certain protocols. 1 hour engagements with the various funders. Some of the things that I might not be able to say is because we are at a very sensitive stage where we all are waiting 2 more weeks for the Minister of Finance to present the midterm budget statement, which has a very big part of it that deals with the financing and the funding of the fiscals, and indeed some of the SOEs, and particularly ESCOM. So some of our response would be that much curtailed. And in its nature, the various conversations that are taking place with the funders, the rating agencies, and of course, as I indicated earlier, I believe number two, we need to also respect and not preempt what the president would be announcing between 5 days from the 30th and there around on the so-called ESCOM special paper. So as we answer these questions, they would have to be Udogolwane who should continue to govern me and my team as to where do I really step out of line. So if we are, can get to that indulgence, let's try. Yeah, Honorable Mare, your accounting is correct. You would definitely pass that paper. You would pass that paper. There is no other way of calling our situation. We're in a terrible situation. The only thing is we know no option that has no ESCOM, which one needs to see the president's directive about unbundling, being more informed by de-risking the concentration. The concentration which comes about with this vertically integrated utility is that anything that happens, whether it's on the municipality that not paying all of ESCOM is at risk, whether it's an operational boiler leak issue, or is a coal availability issue, or is a diesel unavailability issue, and indeed where truckers decide to block the road. For whatever their issue they have between them, miners and ESCOM, it's going to affect the whole of the electricity supply. So firstly, the president's directive on separation flows from deconcentration to mitigate the concentration risk. Secondly, it is informed by just global direction on utilities being run in different ways that we also are not appropriately structured for a utility of today. Thirdly, the whole technology evolution. We are caught up in a very archaic history that does not enable us to play where the world is going. And the last point is within this context there are increasing environmental issues that come from our history. And the fuel we are using is fossil. So this is the space within which we operate. At the social environment, you have the communities that live around the power stations. They rely on the power station. Some communities, they just will not be there if there's no ESCOM or there's no that power station. So as you migrate in your just transition, it's not only dealing with, to Honorable Shabalala, just on that point, the way we look at this just transition is we say there's a decarbonization approach, there's a digitalization approach, there's a deregulation/democratization approach, and indeed there is a decentralization approach. All this to be done within some social plan. You take just one example. You take Henrina as an example. That entire community of Henrina relies on the power station for water. I'm not talking about just the supplier of milk and Burevos or the tuck shop. The entire community of Henrina, without the ESCOM power station. This happens to be one of those power stations that are in line for us to decommission. These are part of our solution for environment is informed by those stations that will decommission, our technology solution, the quality of coal we're going to be burning. So when we do have to think about, is it better to put all those houses in Andrina with solar panels? Let them not burn coal and firewood. So this issue of our social plan on the just transition is not only what is it that we need to do ourselves as a company, it's also not only about our employees. So when we think about which way we're going to go on the renewables, we've got to also think which of these power stations lend themselves to some of the renewable energies, whether it's sun in Mpumalanga or is wind in the Cape. When we think of going through a particular battery storage solution, can we use the current infrastructure to do that? So these thoughts are something we are thinking about, and so the ESCOM paper will go in more details in how we're thinking about this. We also need to realize that at the end of the day, the original model of ESCOM, which was that drove it when it was called the cheapest coal electricity provider, it was you build a power station on top of a coal field. You use belts to convey the coal from underground onto the burners. And then you transport electricity with the transmission lines to a particular distribution point, and then you sell it. That was, a lot has changed. A bulk of it over the last 10, 12 years, then the changes have been decisions that have been taken by ESCOM leadership for a variety of reasons, some ranging from our sourcing of coal from the mines that we owned, that we had to invest in, but we were not the miners, that we had to get the cheap coal. We took a decision about those. We took a decision about how we're contracting for our acquisition of coal from the mines closest to the power station. Those decisions led to us having to find coal furthest from the power station. So where you are now, you're transporting coal to generate electricity and transport electricity. So some of the transport component on the cost per ton is actually more than the cost of generating of the actual coal. So the complexity of the model is such that our real look at it is not going to just be looking at one part. That said, we have to continue to keep the light on now. We have to continue to burn the only fuel we have now, which is coal. So we may be disproportionately spending time on the current supply of coal, from our stock level to its quality to the cost of getting it out of the ground to the cost of getting it to the power station. That's where operationally we are currently at. The performance of our plant is informed and influenced by and large by the quality and the type of coal. Bearing in mind a certain power station was built on a certain coal field or a coal bed which had a certain quality. The further you move from that coal field, you're bringing a different type of coal. The need to blend the coal that is appropriate to this particular boiler requires a particular cost. But it is this. It is this. If you like, you have this BMW. You have to fix the BMW. You can't go and put in another Haval part on it. You have to fix this. And the option is close this, go and buy a new one. We know we don't have those options anyway. The world won't allow us. Funders are not funding new coal. So I'm just painting the field within which we operate. Then I'll take your direct questions, and I'll try and be quick. We have the cost on Gusile and Medupi. We believe we are about 18 billion on each to completion. We are at the 145 billion level for Medupi and 160 for Gusile. I would not, other than just explain, which I had to do at the results presentation. This is us achieving certain things within our plans. If we can improve on that, those numbers could be better. But every day we have to continue to go through the various claims. As the project nears its end, you'll therefore appreciate the flood of claims are coming in to final accounting, and which is where we're getting our experience of the kind of claims that we've been getting relative to the size of the project have shown that between contractors and our own employees, the continued collusion is still there. So we now have to look at every claim. It's not unheard of in the Eskom situation that you would have claims of about, take a number, 38 billion. And when you start to look at that, you find that what is really legitimate there is closer to 2 billion. Yeah, let me not go there. So there is the system has been designed to work just like that. So you have to go painstakingly and almost at a point frustrate your suppliers, those that are legitimate, those that are doing the right thing, because you cannot assume everybody is doing the right thing. So there is that. That's where we are on Medupi and Gusile. I did mention our approach to the green energy, Honorable, and the learnings are in the general statement that I have made. And if we could be paid what we should be paid, maybe the loss would be different. The third part is, and we explain somewhere in there what are the components, what are the drivers that drive this loss. By and large, we have spent more on energy, on primary energy, in light of trying to buy more diesel, use more IPPs, which has resulted in us spending about 17% more on our energy. Our employee costs, members would be aware, the deal we did with the bargaining units from our assumption of a certain number to the 7%, which is a 3-year term. So that number is going to stay with us for that period. And the big part is our depreciation also, because as these plants are coming to near completion, you now have to actually take them off the one side of the financial statement and now treat them separately. Hence, our depreciation is just under 30% as we get to the near part. But in the final analysis, if you think about what business is Eskom in, Eskom is in the business of generating electricity and selling it. Therefore, you go back to those basic business economics. Are we generating sufficient electricity? Are we selling more, or are we selling for more? Because if we're not generating more and not selling more, or not selling for more in rates or in tariffs, we are going backwards. I've just demonstrated to you that the three main cost drivers is our people cost, is our primary energy cost, and is our debt cost. Our economy, our sales, our revenue has grown by 3%. We can go and talk about the economy is not growing, have grown by 3%. Our sales have actually gone negative by just under 2%. What we actually sell. So between what we sell and from revenue what we sell, the gap is what price are we selling it at. You've heard us talk about the need to get a cost-reflective tariff. This mixture of what it costs us, how much we sell on the one side, what we get for it, needless to say, we're not even being paid for what we call revenue, which is why the auditors are saying, for you, revenue must be cash. We don't recognize your revenue unless this particular amount is collected as in the bank. But our costs have gone up the other side. So that is the big challenge that is behind these financials. On Honorable Mkhwanazi, open cycle gas turbines, that NESA has got a certain range that they allow us to train. If we can't recover it from NESA, we've got to take it from the income statement. Sadly, when you're faced with the choices of spending more, 6 billion on diesel, or the impact, other states about 50 billion rand a day to the economy of load shedding, it becomes sadly a no-brainer. Not a justification, just an explanation of when you are in that, your choices is not whether you should use coal or diesel. Your choices is, are you going to have light on or light off? The cost of light off is 50 billion. The cost of diesel is 6 billion. Which is way above the allowable 1% NESA tariff. The IMTT has been that which one member called the JV. I think it was Honorable Kumete that, yes, IMTT has COCTA, has Treasury, has a national DPE, and has got ESCOM. To date, the IMTT has not, we have not been able to see the results that it was meant to be. In there, we have to appreciate there are all sorts of issues, including constitutional issues. We could sit one side and say maybe we should take the equitable share from the municipalities, from Treasury. There are constitutional issues there. There's a point at which we as ESCOM cannot pass the local council, the local municipality. There's a point where the problems are, the end user does pay the municipality. Some of the municipalities don't pass on the payment to ESCOM. You've seen in that graph where we talk about our cost, the gap between what the municipality charges the consumer and what we charge the municipalities is their own markup they make in there. So the IMTT, sadly, to date has not been able to yield. But we've also been caught up with consumers that says, I've paid, I need to be supplied. I was going to pay you. You told me I must pay this municipality. So just give me the electricity. And the court has found in favor of those people. Honorable Mkhwanazi would know our situation in Newcastle firsthand. We really don't take any pride in taking communities to court. It becomes the only thing we have at our disposal. There's no way we will physically expose our employees, get attacked, their cars get banned. There is nothing we can do any more than say, here's a contract, you have breached a contract, we will stop supplying. When you stop supplying, they interdict us from stopping to supply. You go to court, the court considers other factors and say, whilst we're dealing with the permanent issue for now, continue to supply. But the difference is, the matter over which we are litigating was at 1 billion, today is at 20 billion. So you almost have to every day say, now we're going to terminate for this one. Go. But that's not the solution. I spoke about just transition. The PSMA irregular irregular expenses, the fruitful and wasteful, there are too many investigations going on, by the thousands. We believe we have given everything there is to the SIU. The SIU has given everything there is to the NPA. We should be in a situation that of the thousands that they've got, they should be able to start to prosecute. But as you would know, the wheel of justice turns that much slow. We have rights and constitution in this country. There's a particular process. It is taking too long, but all those are in place. We have done various lifestyle audits. The difficulty is some of the contracts, even if there is a defect, you've got to say, let's stop here, let's agree there's a problem here. But solve this problem, we'll go to another process to deal about who's culpable for this problem. Because only you can build going forward. It's never, well, we are in dispute, so we stop now, we go and resolve, say we must continue, because there's a time by when these units must be connected. We'll come back and deal with this. But also in this, it's not only issues of the contractors that you want to do the work, you're litigating them. The employees that must supervise these contractors, you know they are somewhat complicit, or you suspect they are somewhat complicit, or there are suspicions that they are somewhat complicit. And these are issues that are on the prices, on the service level arrangement. I don't think we have we will be able to answer the direct question about the cost for unbundling, but what seems to be obvious is the benefit for it: deconcentration risk, efficiency, and focus on each of these, and it is the way the world is going. So hopefully when the president presents the ESCOM paper, a lot of these details will come through. As I say, in the simple business economics, you must sell what you buy, you must collect what you've sold, you must bank what you've collected. Our formula is broken. We're not selling what we produce. If we're selling it, we're not being paid for it. If we pay it, the money gets stolen between there and our bank account. I've spoken about the environment. I've spoken about our case for renewable. We have making the case for ESCOM, the generation part of ESCOM, to be able to play in the renewable space more than the little involvement we have on wind, to play in a space that would replace our coal fired power station that we decommissioning. You will deal with the integrated report. I did not get to that question. There was a question there on the electrification. This is our commitment to DOE. DOE gives a certain amount of money to electrify communities. So it is that and they do pay for it. Yeah, the Soweto situation and all the municipal situation, we have full appreciation that not everybody can economically be able to pay for electricity. We, however, think, and this is what has come out of the IMTT process, we really need to be able to say consumer X cannot pay, and we accept that he cannot or she cannot pay, or she doesn't want to pay. So those that don't pay, there are those that cannot, and there are those that will not. We need to separate those. There are those that can pay. The question is, what is the incentive for them to pay if the neighbor next door, who can but doesn't pay, pay? So there's an issue about culture here that needs to be brought back, the culture of user pays. And those that cannot pay, I think we need to have a different discussion with the person for those people. whose people are these that cannot pay? And what is the person for whose people these are is doing to pay for his people or her people? We need to have that conversation. Because we talk right and walk left. It is important that this conversation, I'm past the political conversation has to be, these are part of our communities that we accept cannot pay. Cannot. And this is the plan we have for them. Or Eskom must be paid for it. Whether that is paying it through the taxpayer or through subsidies or through bailouts, Eskom is paying for it. So when we have the conversation about Eskom is making losses, we also have to remember that part. And we cannot do any more than going to say, we'll come and check what's the problem, look at the transformer, find the illegal connections. When we take them off, I was in Pietermaritzburg yesterday, where one of the staff members says, because I pay, I'm the only person who can report faults. So the community, those that don't pay, they march to my house and give me the petition to report the fault. Because Eskom will only deal with the fault of a payer in good standing. So those are some of the challenges we have. It's also not true that people that don't pay us are only the communities. We have big customers. Some state-owned enterprises, and these range from educational institution to enterprises and social service providers, hospitals, and some of them just say, we don't want to meet and talk about payment. Say, so why do you want to meet us? We're going to cut. Those are the only tools we have in our position to terminate. We produce this electricity at cost. At the very least, we've got to recoup the cost. And people sell what they've used our electricity for at a profit. On the Siriti South 32 issue, just to bring members of the committee, the honourable members, to really what our role is here. We have a contract currently with SAIEC, the South African energy coal company, which is part of South 32. They have a contract, a coal supply contract with us to supply us coal. I think it still has to go for about 15 or so years. We have a say to consent to the cession of that contract to anybody else. So we don't get involved as to whom they sell that mines or those mines to. We don't get involved in that. Ours is to satisfy ourselves that whoever they have sold to will honor this contract in the same manner, if not better, on the quality, the security, and the quantity of supply of the coal that we have already contracted for. That's the end of our interest. We also have sufficient trust in the structures and institutions in this country to deal with issues of competition. We don't think it's in our place to start to pronounce who is over-concentrated. We, of course, as we have to consider the session, we'll have to consider the risk of our exposure to a particular supplier more than what we've been historically. Given that these are selling to, by the look at, of it, they're selling to an existing supplier of ours elsewhere. We therefore need to satisfy ourselves that that particular supplier would have the financial wherewithal to be able to meet our current arrangement with them and our future arrangement if they succeed in acquiring this. That's the sum total. We are aware of some of the issues the community are raising, and I think they're raising them with the right people, either with Seriti or with South 32. Thank you for the compliment on the little progress we make on governance. The CRO is in place. The CRO office has been established. Part of the report that would come from the ESCOM paper covers a lot of work that Mr. Freeman Nombalo, who is the Chief Restructuring Officer for ESCOM, and that is more dealing with the debt. So between the Department of Public Enterprises and National Treasury and ESCOM and the various funders, Mr. Nombalo is playing in that space. We have done lifestyle audits. We have the report, and we have flowing from that. On it, we took a day and said, from today, no one should do business with ESCOM if they work with ESCOM. Took a day. That was March last year. From that day on, anybody who wants to do business with ESCOM must choose not to work for ESCOM. From that day, we will do lifestyle audits. Anyone we find to have continued to do business with ESCOM or start to do with, business with ESCOM after that day, we would have the ability to discipline, fire, terminate the contract with that supplier, and blacklist that supplier. I was very encouraged to hear the Commissioner of SARS to say it has to go beyond doing business with this entity. We would want to know why would other SOE do business with this person, whose way of doing business is to be corrupt employees and then go out and supply them. That's why when you discipline them and when you call them to discipline, they resign. Because they're going to go outside. They make more money by being suppliers to you anyway. But because we've got a five-year contract with them that was entered into unethically or irregularly, you've got to continue. We want to be able to terminate that contract. And they must know they can't do business. But I would like to take it further. Those that are doing business with us, they must tell us why they continue to do business with that person. So somewhere in there, I'm sure we'll run into other issues. Honorable Zamini, the vandalism, the unfortunate part is, we have our own security, some law enforcement agencies help, but as we've experienced it elsewhere in the Zamazamas, those people that go underground and mine illegally are more armed than the security guards. So the people that we deal with here, I mean, to go and angle grind a pylon, within a space of about 10 days ago, we had the pylon that was cut in the Rodiport area. Had that pylon fallen on this side, it would have fallen on a cable that was taking electricity. The whole of Rodiport would have been blacked out. The problem about losing generated power is that you don't have it, but other generators can generate. The problem about losing a transmission line, you can take out the entire community even though you have power to give it to them, because you need the lines to get it there. So if you cut that line, you're cutting the power that's available, and it can take up to a month to restart that and put in the temporary measures to bring those lines up. So these are they are challenges. And the non-payment, I've spoken about it. We continue to learn every day, Honorable Kumende, but what we know is what drove this 21 billion. It was the OCGTs, employees, and our increasing debt. I've addressed your question about how, what's best. We have a list. There are 10 municipalities that owe us 70% of the debt. They also sadly are concentrated in certain provinces. We know of those 10 which are in what province. there is this argument that our electricity is too expensive. Our intensive energy users group, either in the manufacturing or in the smeltering site, they tell us that the electricity is about 60% of their cost. So even if it grows by 1%, to them it's 61%. They also they give 32% of our revenue, and they take 32% of our electricity. So they are the ones that pay us. They are the ones that we need. They are the ones that it is actually relatively cheaper to service. So they continue to approach us. We continue to look at ways in which we can deal with them. But that should not take away that our blended tariff is still not reflective of what it costs us to produce the, to supply to the other parts of the customers. Honorable Chair, thank you for your compliments. Yes, we do have liquidity problems. We do have some ongoing challenge on some of the irregularities, because some of these irregularities will most probably stay with me for my term of chairmanship on the ESCOM board. Because the contracts that were irregularly entered into, they have to run their course. If you terminate them, you're going to enter into another problem. Some of them are so critical that you must deal with how they were entered into, yet you still need the same person to, you would have, if you were to fire this one, you've got to go and ask them to come back and do the work. Anyway, they are the only ones that can do the work. I've said this before, Chair, really, you need to love yourself less to do what I'm doing. Honestly, so your personal legacy becomes irrelevant. This is not a job I would have applied for. But I'm here now. Whilst I'm here, I'll do my best. One thing certain, I'll most probably not succeed. But I would have not failed to try. I won't fail to try.
Yeah.
I might try and fail.
I've never failed to try.
Always. For so long as I live, inshallah. Unbundling, the President has given us a directive that we must do what has to be done, but there should be no retrenchment. Thirdly, if we can do what needs to be done, take out the people that are not right, are not doing what they should be doing, maybe that would be another way, but that process takes longer. I've spoken about the costs, I've spoken about vandalism, understanding Izinyoga from robots and indigenous communities. On the transport, the history of coal transporters is one that goes back about 4 or 5 years. The coal transport contract should have ended 4 or 5 years ago. It's been extended on an ongoing basis from year to year, 6 months to 6 months, month to month. And the sad part about the real issue is not that we don't want to do coal transport. Where we've got to transport coal by road, we'll have to. But our view is we should go back to using more conveyor belts. If we cannot use conveyor belts, only use rail. Only if we cannot use rail, to use coal, that use road, because that's just the cost of this. The unfortunate part is our existing contractors, whose contracts have been extended over these last 5 years, their big issue is, no, we were here, no one should be here. You want to have another contract only with us. Want a right and right to say you can only use our truck. We cannot agree to that. Honestly, we cannot agree to that. So it's okay. You can open the tender, but open it to us. We cannot do that. That is the real crux of the matter. And it has to be seen for what it is. That said, we have as recent as 10 days ago or a week ago, we have started to address our, as part of our review of our cold cough, we have to, the same conversation that our ministers were having with the miners, we have got to go on and sort out contracting as best as possible and as appropriate as possible, trying to get as least cost as is possible. But nobody should have a best right to transport Eskom's coal. Whether you need that coal or not, you must just get into transport. We can't agree to that. So, Honorable Chair, I don't know, Khalif, is there anything I should have said or I should not have said that you want to correct?
Chair, what you've already said, I'll just highlight. Maybe to Honorable Shabalala, my understanding when you're referring to the integrated report, you're referring to the IPP bid windows, from bid window 1, I think, up until bid window 4 it was concluded. And yes, generally they are long-term contracts, I think 15 to 20 years. So many of them still have a number of years to continue. And especially, you know, as you sign more future rounds, there will be IPP supplying electricity to the grid for a number of years. And within those contracts, there's normal escalation clauses as well. However, let's also acknowledge that in a tight system, IPPs do contribute positively to one supply and to reducing the requirements and the need for OCGTs. We see that benefit coming through in this financial year, also coupled with the focus of the generation recovery plan in terms of the existing fleet. And even on the new build, you know, yes, the plant is late, but the fact that at stages you find 6 units of Medupi operating, that has a positive benefit. And the technical guys have told us that stations like Medupi have contributed to us getting through the winter without interrupting supply to the country. Maybe to Honorable Kumeli, the detail of the municipalities. Similarly, in the integrated report on page 91, we show the top 10 that comprise 13.9 of the 19.9 billion. But if I want to add, I think the one point was asked by many of the honorable members is, currently we have 440 billion worth of debt. If that average repayment term, Honorable Chair, is 10 years, that's give or take, call it 45 billion per annum on repayment. Similarly, the interest on that around 10% is about 40 billion per annum. So that is why we're showing our debt service cover of 85 billion. Getting back to Honorable Maria's comment on the cash flows and we bankrupt. If you're only generating 30 billion from cash from operations, to improve the ratios that Honorable Monkwanazi asked, a combination of one or two things can happen. One, the cash from operations to earnings must improve from the 30 billion to a higher number. Number two, the debt service commitments need to be reduced from the 85 billion to a lower number. And I think this is the elements that will be taken into account by the other committees, the CRO, etc. How do you get to a balance when going forward your cash from operations are enough to sustain the operations and the debt commitments? So getting back quickly to the rear debt, currently we're 50 billion short in our cash flows, 30 billion versus 85 billion commitments. The 20 billion from arrear customers is a once-off payment. Once you've paid, they settle. Yes, going forward, at least it'll prevent that annual growth of 500 million per annum, maybe a 8 billion benefit. But that just improves your cash from operations to 40 billion. Yet my debt commitments are 45 billion. And this is basically what is facing Eskom, and more importantly, government, in how do you make Eskom sustainable. And maybe a last comment. Yes, unbundling is important, we must do it. But if the cake is too small, whether you cut it into 5 pieces or 25 pieces, it's still too small for everyone to enjoy the cake. I think that's the last comment, Jeff. Maybe Martin, I just want to talk on the metros.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman. The question was asked about the metros, and the payment level by the metros is 100%. So that is why we only show the municipalities. Otherwise, it will just dwarf the number, and it will look very good. So that's why we show the 81% of municipalities.
Honourable Martin?
Only one follow-up question, sir. Thank you so much. As we all know, there was this commission of inquiry by the standing committee into Eskom, and flowing from that is the Zondo Commission. My question as A and B, A, did Eskom as the entity itself have any lawsuits against certain executives for, how am I to put it, benefited irregularly? And B, has the payment for the pension fund done to Mr. Brian Molefe, has that been paid back as ordered by the court?
Honourable Mkhwanazi?
Last to say, you said on your price of electricity not sufficient to recover and an efficient cost. And the last bullet there, you said the long-term solution is for the electricity price to migrate to cost reflexively. What would be the impact on that to the end user? Vis-a-vis what is said by the chairman, you show lowest cost. That's electricity. There's an argument that electricity is expensive, and what will be the impact on the indigent communities as elaborated by the portfolio chair?
You don't have any other follow-up, Honourable Lamine, Honourable Kumet, Sabalala?
President, except to say I heard the comment on the Soweto issue, and I was still employed to the same, who lost for Bobashon Jado. Yet now.
She's here on his capacity as an acting CEO.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Chairman. That's the one that we are addressing. So really, we also implore that there should be perhaps more of a plan and how you're going to look at it. Let's not punch the numbers. You know, I'll tell you in the municipality that is Johannesburg, DA-led or other coalition, Mr. Marais, that might not necessarily have the interest to really cover those ones who are busy on the street. There's lots of matches that has happened. Went to the municipality, communities, endless evidence. Like you said, electricity affects everything. The children involved, people who are sick and all sorts of things. When they go longer without electricity for over 2 months, as you said, the next door neighbor is refusing to pay, the other one is paying. The grannies are paying. If you want loyal people, those are the grannies. And most of those houses, the owners are the grannies. The transgressors might be their kids and so forth and so on. So if you can draw up a plan for them, look into the issue of Soweto, the Jabulani, I can give you all of them every day. So let's find a way to integrate and make sure there's a plan. Communicate to councillors and make sure that you assist where you can. Thanks.
C'è anche Strelitzko. I'm in the house. Put that way to low Mashabalar. I think I should have responded earlier. The point you're making, we take it on board, which is engage the community. Talk to the community. We are. I think in the fullness of time we'll be able to share. Some have even found my number that every day I get a countdown that we haven't had power in Mdeni on such and such a day. You're correct. We have elderly, sickly, frail elderly, some people for their own medication, whether they're nebulizers, they need to have power. Some of the diabetics also need to have their treatment kept in a particular temperature. So we take the point. We should re-engage the community, and there is members of communities in Soweto that are willing to come, let's talk. And let's find a plan, and we are, and we'll be able to give you details on that when we next meet. Yes, there are various claims that we are instituting both criminal and civil against some of our employees. At the start of it, as I said, there is enough evidence of what has happened between. We have got contractors that have confessed that we have paid employees so-and-so. And here's the money, it went into this account, and here's this. Because some of the modus, Honorable Chair, is not only the employee, there's a bogus subcontractor in the middle. They create a company that subcontracts to the main contractor that has been given the overinflated contract. And the benefit, the spoils were shared with a bogus company. At the end of that bogus company, we have even now managed to reach the actual employee of Eskom, who is either there's a trustee, and so we are. We have to give that. The SIU has submitted this report to the president. There is the work they have now passed on to the to the NPA. There is also, we are waiting for the tribunal that is being set up to at least prioritize ESCOM specific cases. The appeal and the litigation process on the Mulifi pension, just for the record, this is money to the pension fund, not to us. That process, we are not uninterested. The process has been exhausted. I think Mr. Mulifi has been put on terms to pay the money by a certain date. I don't know whether you have anything to update on where EPPF has got that money. And members would have been aware that one of our biggest victory this last 10 days was on the trillion matter, where the McKinsey was 1.6 billion, we got the 1 billion. The other 600 million, we spent a lot of time. We have now finally got the High Court to find that money is payable to us, but also that Mr. Wood cannot be delinked from Trillium. So, and it's been given a number of days, about 10 days to pay Eskom money. So, but no doubt in my mind they'll continue to appeal this process. It is in the nature of our system. Thank you, Chair. Honorable Mkwanazi raised a question about electricity costs. You want to address that?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. What we're saying is Eskom, we acknowledge that the cost reflect the price on an efficient basis is a certain level. And if we decide and the regulator decide that the price should not be at that level now and it will migrate to that level, by implication, Eskom is carrying that difference of that cents per kilowatt times those volumes. And that is basically the embedded subsidy that we see come to our financials. So what we're saying here is, as long as you keep the price below the true cost reflective level, one must acknowledge as government that there is a subsidy, quantified, and understand who's going to pay for that subsidy. And then to the Honourable Makwanazi's comment on within the regulation mechanism and NERSA, there are avenues and mechanisms to protect the indigent, etc. And this is where NERSA and government must come up with those designated sectors. This is how we're going to protect them from future escalations to whatever level, but acknowledge that the cost of supplying them doesn't go away. It must be covered by some other mechanism. And I think those are the discussions also that the Chair referred to when we spoke about those communities, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Eskom, led by the Chair, the Acting CEO. Can we, for the last time now, get a comment from the acting DG?
Thank you, Chair. I think what we are all appreciating is that the task that the board and management of Eskom are faced with is quite a mammoth one. And their success is very much dependent on all of us across society really joining them in this particular effort that they are on. I mean, the major risk that they are faced with is obviously ensuring that they are able to get to a point where they have they are able to generate adequate cash from the business to be able to meet their obligations, therefore reducing their reliance on the state. From government side, there are efforts obviously to assist them in that regard. I think the green issue, whether it relates to renewables or whether it relates to the issue of emissions, is one of the big risks that that you're all faced with, especially the communities that are living close to these power stations. Between ourselves and the Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries, we're also seeing how we can help Eskom in that regard, because the cost of compliance is also quite massive. We have spoken quite extensively on the issue of municipal debt, and I think as parliamentarians, we are also hailing from specific constituencies. I think it's important as you head back, if you're regular, visit back there, that the issue of ensuring people who are able to call them is very important. And ultimately, this is their asset, the asset that ensures economic opportunities are created. And those in digital families, if they have energy to keep warm and be able to put their data near. But it's all our responsibility, all of us responsibility to keep the asset afloat. So the last point is that in not so long a time, we should hear about the situation. It will help us in ensuring that we all are galvanized in a united way in getting not only Eskom but the electricity sector to be repositioned for the 21st century. We should not escape us that this company is over 100 years. It started in around 1880 with this gold discovered in Gauteng. So to be logical to ensure that it remains the shape it was when it was established.
well, no, more than 100 years from now, and as the chairperson has indicated, throughout the world, the old style monopolies, the structure that along the line of Eskom are no more. But it's important as a country that we also need in that particular direction. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Acting Director General of the Department. I think we now reach at the end of the session. We will once again thank you for your contribution, for your presentation. I think also to us is another update on the development with the SOCOM, for which we all have interest to resolve the problem they find themselves in. And with those words, we thank you so much, and we end the session.